The agent's name says the department that developed Newton. It's not an operational department. So we decided to move the operational aspects of PPM out of new projects into the more operational departments. And that's something where we started to work on middle of last year. This sounds simple, but in practice it's far more complicated since all the knowledge is in one department. Okay, most of it was documented, but again, you know how things work. If a single group of people is working on something, they forget the knowledge is in their head, and they forget to write it down. So we went through this operation. We had the site constraint that we wanted to keep the service levels at least as good as they were before, but to the outside you shouldn't know this, and I haven't received any complaints. So I think we succeeded there. And we finished this restructuring sort of February of this year. And we now have a situation where the TPM service is basically being offered by three departments. First of all, there's the operations group at the right instance. They install the dev boxes. They do first line support. So if you send in a request or then an operator there looks at it, tries to either deal with it or forward it to the appropriate person. And they also operate the servers, the tape robots, the disk, whatever other kit you have to keep the servers running. Second department involved is the ASD department, the software engineering department. As the name says, they do software engineering, so maintenance and development of all the software. And finally, there's new projects. We still look at the data, and we try to come up with possible new features and enhancements for the service. So this whole thing took 8 months, 9 months, and I'm quite happy that it's over with, since it took a lot of time. And I think, as far as I can judge, the service remains the same throughout the operation, and it's gotten even better. Okay. So that's purely internal work. Next thing is DNS mode. DNS mode is something that sits on the desk boxes and monitors performance of DNS servers, so root servers, CCP servers, those kind of things. It has been around for about a year and a half in various alpha and beta stages. At some point we decided, okay, let's make the production service, it's stable. So we spent some time finalizing software, finalizing service, and turned this into version 1. In parallel with this was a request from the membership, basically saying, yes, you're doing things for our CCPLDs, and, well, they're not members, and they should pay you for the cost, and so make it a self-supported service. And that in itself is quite simple, but it requires a service contract, some documentation, and things like that, and money is transferring kind of hands. So we published a standard service contract for DNSMON that's available as RAD document 3.2. When we started this, we had 14 CCPLDs. Meanwhile, 10 of them have signed the contract, and we're discussing details with the other four, but I'm pretty sure that they'll sign it too. And we'll start active promotion for other PLDs as soon as this writing is over. So, is this... So, are we done with this? Well, sort of. It's a regular service now, but as things go along, when you develop these things, you get requests for, oh yes, can you add this feature, can you add that feature. So we have version 1, that's final, stable, but we already have a request for version 2, and now that's the whole administrative and turning things into production messes out of the way. We'll start to look at that list sometime after this meeting. Another thing to finish, since 1999 or something, there's a utility running on those test boxes called BuildDaemon, and that's a tool to get access to the raw data as it's being collected. It's essentially the equivalent of a tilde minus f of a file on your Unix box, except that it operates on a network, you connect to the box and you get the data on your screen and you compile it into a file. This, like I said, this thing has been around since 1998, people have used it. But the first intensive user of it became the M6, when they started to deploy boxes on their side and really built tools using the BuildDaemon feature. And when we started to run it, we found out that there were conditions that we could skip one or two lines in the output in the screw of the otherwise perfect M6 statistics. So we sat down, we fixed it. It's now, as far as we can see, a rock solid way to get access to all the raw data on your box. In the meantime, since 1998, people have asked for other ways to access data on the test boxes, SCP, some other quick hacks. These are still around, but we want to deprecate them since we really think that this tool is now the way to go. So if you're using other ways to access data, expect a mail from us sometime soon asking you to switch over. And of course, if you ask for the data, we'll point you to this tool. The thing I should maybe add there is that this BuildDaemon tool is intended to get access to the data as soon as it's being collected. We also have another way to get people the data that basically waits until the following day if you're not in a hurry or something like that. And those ways will continue to exist as well. Next thing we spent a lot of time on was timekeeping. You have to remember that timekeeping was on the test boxes was essentially designed between something like 97 and 99. It used state-of-the-art stuff then, NTP, whatever, the latest 3DZ kernel, other stuff. Okay, it worked. We thought it worked well. But of course, in the last 4 or 5 years, there have been lots of developments. And we spent, in particular Thomas, spent lots of time over the winter to study possible improvements. Thomas will report on his work in the next talk, and we obviously plan to implement most of his recommendations over the summer. Okay. Related to timekeeping are CDMA clocks. Standard test box uses a GPS clock. Sometimes installing GPS is a hassle. In the US you have a system called CDMA, which also gives a time signal. There are units around it to pick up those signals. And what we discovered over the last year is that these models are great when they work, and they're a nightmare to debug or to understand problems. So what we're looking for, and we'll also contact the people using CDMA by email, is somebody who is interested to spend some time trying to really understand the issues with this clock and debug these modules. We suspect there are some problems on the firmware that screws things up. That's something we would like to do. Okay. Next item, also a thing that has been going on for a while. It's called OAMP. That's an IETF effort. It stands for One-Way Active Measurement Protocol. The idea of OAMP is that if you follow the IETF effort, there is a specification that tells you how to measure delays and how to measure losses. This specification does not say anything about packet formats and things like that, and how to set up certain measurements, etc. And the result is that there are at least 5 or 6 implementations of these IRCs that all measure the same thing, but they all use different packet formats, different setup mechanisms. And OWASP is a way to unify this. The IRC has been finished. It's in some of the IRC editor's queue. We started to plan the implementation of it since we think this is a great idea. We'll immediately multiply the user base by a factor 4 or 5. And we'll definitely implement the data format so we can talk to the boxes. We're still looking a bit at how we do doing the setup sessions, the setup of sessions, either go entirely to the OWASP mechanism or sort of put a wraparound our setup that will talk OWASP and the fixed mechanism, and we'll just try to find out what's the easiest way to do this. And this is something that's in progress for the beginning of the summer. Final slide. Other things we're looking at. Bandwidth is still an issue. Voice over IP. There were some requests to use test boxes for that. We're looking into that. We have some outstanding work on V6W4 comparison. Of course, we always want to deploy more boxes. And the thing that got added yesterday was after Neil O'Reilly's talk in the plenary, the group will definitely spend some time following up on that, see how PPM efforts and this work sort of can collaborate and come up with something that's also covered for discussion in the technology section. And I think that's all I wanted to say. Any questions?
Okay. No questions? Thank you very much, Hank. Okay, now we're going to have Tom, right, or Thomas. You go by either name, right? All right, doing your presentation on the clock. Thank you.
Go right ahead. Working in the new projects group, and particularly on TTM, and I was looking into how to improve time measurement in TTM. As you know, in TTM we are doing one-way delay measurement. That is, we want to know how long it takes for a test packet to travel from test box A to test box B. We certainly don't want to know how long it takes for the test boxes to process the test packet. So we want to know how big these processing effects are and what we can do to mitigate them. The agenda for today's talk is we look at the current performance of TTM so we can get some baseline figures to compare with. After that, we want to make sure that the local timekeeping solution on the test boxes we are using today is stable and if there are any better alternatives. We also want to look at kernel-level timestamping and see if we can improve the situation there in getting timestamps. We want to take a look at device calling, so we probably can get rid of interrupt processing overhead and variation. And finally, a solution I want to propose here that I call DAC-TTM. That's, as the name suggests, you might know DAC cards, hardware-only timekeeping solution for TTM. The motivation to do this is, as Hank already told us before, TTM was designed in between 97 and 99 and started in 2000. And there have been new developments since then, and we want to see if these new developments can improve our service. So to begin with, we want to have a look at the current performance of TTM. Here we are looking at a test box, a standard test box here, no network traffic involved so far. And this is a plot over time of so-called PPS offset. A PPS offset is simply the time difference between the GPS receiver and the local clock when a PPS signal comes in, that is every second. And by looking at these PPS offsets over time, we can judge how good the local timekeeping solution is. So this is the PPS offset plot of the standard test box. And you can see that this measurement was taken over the course of 17 hours. And you can see that the ability to keep the time or to synchronize with the GPS receiver is very good. The median value here is practically zero. So over 18 hours, we were able to keep the time to 0 microseconds. And we have a variation of, or a range of measurement values of plus minus 2 microseconds, as you can also see on the histogram on the left. I don't want to bother you with detailed figures here, because I want to show them later on when I compare to the NTP alternatives. The next measurements involve sending performance of a test box. So we constructed a test setup like shown here. We used two test boxes, T95 and 96, and cross-connected them and put a deck card in between. I suppose you know deck cards. These are passive timestamping frame grabbing devices that take the time when the packet comes in. At least the model we used is a passive one. So when looking at the so in this setup, the left test box sends out the test packet, the deck card receives it, and by looking at the difference between the timestamp that is in the test packet and the deck time, we can tell about the sending performance of the test box. So looking at the results here, you can see that in average it takes 34 microseconds for a test packet to get its timestamp to until it appears on the wire. And that is practically measurement error, more or less, because this is host processing that adds up to the TTM measurement result, and we obviously want to get rid of that. These bands here, by the way, are caused because of operating system overhead, but I don't have time here to go into detail. I discussed them in my thesis, which will appear on the TTM website in a few weeks, so if you're interested in that, please look into my thesis. The complete range here, by the way, or the range of the main measurement values here is around 5 microseconds. Finally, receiving performance plots, these are real TTM delays as we plot in the web pages, and this is raw TTM data. Between two test boxes that are cross-connected, and you can see an offset here of 100 microseconds, and a surprisingly huge variation here basically the range of all these measurement values is 120 microseconds. So that's a lot. If you compare that to the 5 microseconds we had on the sending side, and considering that we have 120 here on the receiving side, we obviously want to do something about that. So if you consider that some people use or plan to use test boxes in a local network where we would measure sub-microsecond delays, or let's say delays of around 1 microsecond, we already would have an error here of 10%. That's something we definitely would want to have.
1 millisecond. 1 millisecond delays.
Exactly. So 1 millisecond delays with a ratio of 100 microseconds, we have 10%. We would have 10% error. So we obviously want to do something about that. Before we can do something about the software, we have to make sure that the local timekeeping is as good as it can get. So TTM today uses NTP to synchronize to a GPS reference clock, which emits a PPS signal that is processed by a FreeBSD facility called PBSSync. PBSSync is a kernel option and enables the FreeBSD kernel to steer its local clock according to the PBS signals coming in. There is a Lua driver provided by NTP, the so-called Atom driver. It acts like a reference clock and is also able to process PBS. And we simply try it out and see if it will perform better. So comparing that to the PBS plot we saw before, you can already see in the plot that the resulting PBS offset plot is a bit smoother. And also the figures suggest that, for example, looking at the interquartile range or the standard deviation, that the timekeeping performance here is a bit better than what we have today. We also got hold of a pre-release copy of NTPMS. That's a new but yet unreleased NTP daemon written from scratch by Paul Henninger. You might know him. He has written most of the FreeBSD timing code, and he's also a researcher regarding to timekeeping, time capturing with FreeBSD. So he wrote that NTP driver for FreeBSD 5, and unfortunately he used a facility that FreeBSD 4 lacks. And remember that our test box is from FreeBSD 4. That is monotonic timers. Supporting NTPNS to FreeBSD 4 involves more work than simply porting the code from FreeBSD 5 to 4. And also, Paul Henningkamp himself suggested that porting into FreeBSD 4 is probably not trivial. So because of that, we did consider NTPNS to use for TCM. I tried it out anyway. I just ported the code and luckily it worked. Briefly commented out the stuff that has to do with monotonic timers. And yeah, that's the result. We have huge steps in here for 200 microseconds. And because we don't expect huge improvements over, we already pretty good performing NTP anyway, and we would need some work to get that right, we don't consider PLS for PTM. So concluding NTP performance, if we use the Atom driver instead of PBS sync, we can achieve slight improvements along the timekeeping. Would be easy to switch. It's just a kernel recompilation and a new line of the CNP account. And we don't have to fear any stability concerns because the driver is well tested and considered to work. So now we want to see what we can do to improve the test boxes processing software. Today, the TTM standard process uses userland time standard. That is, it gets the time from userland, runs entirely in userland, gets the time, then writes it to the test packet and finally sends it out. Obviously, there is some delay between when you get the time or when the sender gets the time to until it appears in the kernel and finally in the wire. So the idea is to apply the timestamp as late as possible. Ideal would be to apply it in the kernel when the test packet travels through the networking stack and to apply the timestamp as late as possible. The TTM receiver, on the other hand, already uses kernel-level timestamping because we use BPF, the Berkeley packet filter, facilities to grab the frame of the network. So, unfortunately, we can't improve the receiving side here using kernel-level timestamp. Nevertheless, the sending side certainly improved of kernel-level timestamping, and so I wrote the kernel patch for FreeBSD that enables a userland application to request kernel-level timestamping from the kernel on a per-socket basis. So this is more or less pseudocode, but it boils down to these three lines. You just enable it for the socket. You define where to write the timestamp in the payload, and then simply write the packet to the socket file description. So we want to compare if there are any improvements when you use that. And indeed, we can see that the offset, as expected, goes down by quite a bit, 30-40% improvement here. And also the variation got lower, and the amount of outliers got lower, which we can see when looking at the standard deviation, where we have an improvement of over 50% here. To conclude this chapter, if we use the Clavel patch, we can improve the performance on the sending side, with both offset and variation decrease. The patch itself is rather small and simple. It's only, I guess, 50 more lines of code. The changes to the TTM software are minimal. I already did them in a separate CVS branch, and I would consider that production ready. So we know already that we can't improve the receiving side with kernel level timestamping because we're already using it. So it's surprising when there's still this huge variation here around plus minus 60 microseconds. The only thing that's happening before the packet enters the networking stack is interrupt processing. So we are suspecting that interrupt processing is the cause of problems here on the receiving side. And indeed, FreeBSD network interrupts are so-called slow interrupts, as opposed to so-called fast interrupts that handle the serial port, for example. That's perfectly okay for everyday network processing or network applications. But in our case, it's the cause of these huge variations on the receiving side. So the idea is to not use interrupts at all for networking. We can achieve that by using device polling. So device polling means that when a new packet comes in, the network card doesn't report to the operating system there is a new packet. Instead, the operating system constantly asks or polls the network interface card if there are any new packets and if it's time to. So this takes place in previously in a timer interrupt and additionally in the idle loop. So when the system is idle, it has nothing else to do, it can constantly, and obviously at a very high rate, ask the network interface, are there any new packets? And if there is a new packet indeed, it gets processed immediately. So we want to compare that again with the standard test plot. And indeed, we can see a decrease in the offset, and more importantly, a huge decrease here in variation. The interquartile range went down a lot, over 20 times lower, and the range between first and 99th percentile also improved a lot. The standard deviation suffers a bit because of an increased amount of outliers. It sounds too good to be true, and indeed we have a huge problem here with device polling. As I told you before, we have this good effects of device polling because of idle loop polling. But the CPU only or the operating system only executes the idle loop when it has nothing else to do. So what happens when there is load? Well, if the test box is under load and we use device polling, we have a huge problem here. And the system hardly spends any time in the idle loop because it's busy processing userland applications. And the measurement value is really freaked out. So this is a measurement taken over 20 minutes with three different periods of system load. So in the beginning, we're idle here. Then I started a make load process, which is obviously very CPU intensive. And you can see the measurement values really, really freak out. They go up to 1 millisecond. Then a period of idleness again, then load again, and the third one here is end loop polling simply turned on using syscontrol. You can do that previously without having to reboot or anything. So theoretically, device polling would yield very good results, but because of load behavior, I can't recommend using it in TTM. So we're still stuck here with the problem. We still didn't improve the receiving performance and the obviously not optimal performance on the receiving side. So what I want to propose here today is a solution that I call back TTM. The idea is simply to equip a test box or to equip test boxes with back parts that actually do the timestamping instead of the operating system. So if you consider two test boxes here, connected by a binary network, let me say it the other way around. That's a test set that we built here, and simply connected the two boxes with a cross connection. And we wanted to see how that would really perform. Don't be distracted by the bands here in this plot. This is the limiting resolution of the deck cards simply. These deck cards run at 60 MHz, which results to a resolution of 16 MHz, which results to a resolution of 16 nanoseconds. So this is a measurement taken over 18 hours, and all of the measurement values fall into an extremely narrow band of 300 nanoseconds. So that's very good. You don't have a single outlier here in 18 hours. And it's interesting, I want to add that here, it's interesting that the mean value is 3.8 nanoseconds. And if you recall that the light propagation speed of 1 meter of cable is 5 nanoseconds, and we use the cable length of 1 meter, it's very interesting to see up here. So it's fascinating that we can measure that. So since that performs pretty good, we want to know how big the effort would be to integrate that into TTM. The most important thing, obviously, is backwards compatibility. We can't equip all the test boxes we have out there with deck cards at once and switch the service to DAC and TTM overnight. So we have to make sure that test boxes that are equipped with deck cards can operate with test boxes that are not equipped with deck cards. Having a deck card in a test box must be optional, not mandatory. Fortunately, it's not like we would have to redesign TTM completely. The biggest change is to calculate the final delays, the TTM delays, centrally instead of at the receiver. Today, the receiver is responsible for calculating the final delays. When a test packet comes in, the receiver compares the time in the test packet with its own time, and that's the final delay. But since deck cards are unable to modify the packet that travels through them, we can't put the deck timestamp into the test packet, so the receiver would have nothing to compare with. Instead, we create lists on both the sender and the receiver with outgoing and incoming packets, respectively, and their IDs. And the central processing machine picks these lists up and compares the matching packet IDs and calculates the final delay. We still need the preliminary delays, as I call them, so that's our TTM delays that we have now. We still need that for the plots on the test boxes because they are web servers and users can plot preliminary measurement results there. And we still have to ensure that that works. So, just two slides that should be read like a flowchart. We have three test boxes here. The sending test box on the left, the receiving test box on the right, and the central processing box at the bottom. When we started the sending test box here with the send packet process on the far left, it generates a software timestamp, and the packet then goes to the DAC listener, that's a new piece of software that has to be written. And this DAC listener captures the DAC timestamp and stores it to the list. Then the packet travels into the receiver, where it again, it travels through the DAC listener on the receiving side, which again takes a DAC timestamp and stores it in a list. And finally, the packet travels to the receiver process, like today, where the preliminary delay for the web plots is generated. And finally, central processing picks up both generated lists and combines them to the final TTM delay. It works the same way when test box or both test boxes are not equipped with DAC cards. So, suppose the sending test box doesn't have a deck card, then simply the software timestamp generated like today would be stored in the list that is later picked up by the central processor. This way, we don't have to keep track which test boxes have a deck card, additional, and we will make sure that every scenario possible is managed by the new system. So concluding in ECTTM, we have very good measurement results here. We have no host processing effects at all. Very good results. The drawback is we would need some work to implement that. I outlined that in my thesis. It's not like a configuration change or a kernel patch like in the previous improvements. And of course the price tag. Such a deck card isn't cheap. Price tag is around 800 euros per card, but we might be granted a volume reduction. So let me summarize my work. If we switch to the NTP admin driver, we can improve local timekeeping. It's a good replacement, it's stable, and it's easy to switch. By kernel level timestamping, we can improve the performance on the sending side. The patch is clean and simple, and I would recommend to use it. Device polling can't be used in TTM because of the mentioned load behavior. Finally, DAC TTM yields very good results, but it would need some work. Perhaps it's a student project for one of my successors. And I bet you know the next slide. Do you have any questions? Yes?
I don't know if you follow my conversation yet, but I mean, I spent some time implementing from a contribution part of the forest that probably got that
basically. I know, peer print.
Yeah, and the successful basically, you could support the device at the user stage. So, your application for the user the application.
Yes.
Has direct access to the task. So, not in the but directly to the I think you can show some reforms because I think that the current improvement depends on validating the user application because that's something that the user is able to do.
Yes.
But I think that for one, active measurement that we need, the kernel must be removed. Because if the kernel is removed, even without following it, you always have problems. Because among the relations, a lot of times, you are supposed to do.
I saw your presentation at, I think you gave the same talk at the same conference in Amsterdam, if I recall correctly, in September. And we wanted to follow up on that. We talked about modifying drivers to enable this memory mapped application so that the device itself would write the packet to a memory location and would be processed there. But we did not follow up on that because of the complexity that would be involved. And I think it wasn't even possible with our network drivers to enable that mode, with our network cards. I think that was the reason why we didn't consider that.
Yeah,
okay, no more questions, and thank you very much, Thomas.
So now we get a little bit to perhaps the more contentious part of our meeting, and we're going to be discussing an idea that probably has been festering for a long time. So you have the servers, you have TTM,
you know, so what? You know, what do you do? What is it useful for? And the truth of the matter is that this has been a question that was asked around for a very long time. And it was not really clear to the membership what, you know, what is the use, what is the value proposition of TTM? I think originally, according to the discussion I had with Rene, who was a long-time contributor to, you know, to TTM, the idea was that ISPs would be interested in finding out how they are doing with respect to the three main methods amongst each other. But it actually turned out that it was actually a solution to a problem that did not really exist, because, you know, most people were looking at TTM for research. And it was not until very recently, and I'm talking perhaps the last year, year and a half, that people said, you know, perhaps there is a way of using TTM in operations. So why would you use TTM in operations to begin with? Say you were a person, you know, forget that you guys are service providers or, you know, whatever. Say you're just a person who finds DSL or cable access at home. And you're buying from, you know, from some service provider. It is very difficult for you to prove to the service provider that something has gone wrong. I mean, typically, I live in the U.S., in Northern California, and, you know, if I call, you know, the internet does not work, I mean, I cannot get out past my, you know, Linksys gateway. I call up SBC, which is the local, see my family say, I go about half an hour trying to explain to them that the computer isn't plugged into the wall, it has electricity, and it's running. That's kind of basically what's going on. So, and I have no way of being able to go somewhere, you know, with respect to the service provider, where I feel that I'm getting an unbiased opinion as to what the quality of service is. And if you sit and think about it, I think that there is a place for an organization such as RAP, who does not work for the consumer, does not work for one particular service provider, does not have a vested interest with any one particular, you know, hardware or software manufacturer, to provide an unbiased metric for, call it SLA, quality of service, whatever it is that we call it. And, you know, you look at this and you say, you know, I'm a service provider. I think it's going to be a feather in my cap if I can show from a third party, doesn't have anything to do with me, that my service is good. And what I mean by service provider, I don't mean just, you know, somebody who, you know, sells transit or sells, you know, retail, you know, cable or whatever. Also mean exchange point operators, because as it happened, you know, one of the people here in the audience is from OMSIX, and he generated some discussion as to, you know, people who participate in the exchange, how good is the exchange, how do they measure, you know, the uptime, the throughput, the delay across the switch, etc. So it does appear that there are a number of places in which the value of RIPE as a mutual organization can actually be used. And the reason for which we're having this particular discussion is in order to facilitate, you know, some talk and with input from you, and you notice that we have a, you know, more cozy setup than the plenary, to talk about, you know, a couple of things. Do you think that it makes sense for RIPE, you know, RIPE and CC, to actually play the role of a trusted third party? You know, if you're to buy as a consumer, or if you, you know, say, an operating exchange, would you feel that your interests as a service provider would be well represented by the metrics, and that your customer can actually trust right? And the second question that I get here, you know, if right, you know, is indeed the right person, what do you want it to do? Because, you know, clearly the typical packet loss, delay, you know, jitter, etc., that is being done in here is not sufficient for people to line up outside and say, I want a TTM box. What does it really take to turn the service or some form of it into something that's useful? something there would be good for you, would be good for your customers. So, you know, with that being said, you know, let's try to answer this question. So I would welcome any, you know, opinions on the floor on the first question. Do you think that it makes sense for Rocket, as I perceive it, as I understand it, as you understand it, to be a place where metrics are gathered in a neutral fashion? Is it a good place to gather them? So, opinions from the floor. Anybody feels like venturing an opinion?
Yes.
Please introduce yourself. So you're talking about, let me understand what is your business. Your business is that you're some sort of web farm, a server farm, data center. And you want to know your visibility with respect to the rest of the internet. What are we talking about here?
I think we need to identify interesting partners. First, we have internet business, we have the service providers, internet operators.
Right.
We have government agencies
right.
that provide services through web services. We have governments that actually are trying to get some understanding and control over the internet infrastructure. And then we have, for example, the web service providers like distinguished newspapers that want to provide certain newspaper services to their customer base. And I would say you can divide that into a couple of parties.
So what I hear you saying is that you perceive several models. Service providers,
yeah.
End users, and content providers. Yeah. Right? Is that a fair assessment?
And
government. So government, service providers, content providers, and media. Okay, and in service providers you would then include infrastructure providers such as Exchange. Okay, that's fair. But in terms of the question I was asked,
yes.
Anybody raise their hand? No? Yes.
Let me maybe ask the test, because the test sometimes for maybe test providers and stuff like this, and they could also be partnerships in platforms.
The press. The press, like in
computer channels.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that I think is counterproductive in this particular form is to try to turn anything related to metrics into a competition. So the idea here is not to compare providers. The idea here is to be able to help providers do well. Because I don't think that anybody is going to, to want to come in and say, I want to give him, test services from my subscribers. If the association, the RAP itself, does not help them look good, right? So, I agree with you that the press may have an interest in doing calibration, but we also have to be aware that it is not in the interest of the membership to actually pit one service provider against another.
Did I miss the point?
Because you are not doing it if there is not any problem with the service that you are looking at. You have a contract with an option provider where you have some SLAs defined there, and then you have the gap feeling that these SLAs are somehow violated, and then you go out and say, you're right, you have to place options. Then you can just one up there, and one there, we both agree on it, and then we start to measure it. You always.
Well, right. I mean, I understand what you were saying, but I think that there is a, and I don't want to get into the discussion. to provide comparisons between service providers for the benefit of the end user. I think that the key benefit in my mind that kind of brings all of the interests together, that it is synergistic in that way and non-confrontational and useful, is to be able to allow the service provider to give data about the performance that the user is going to receive, document what the metrics are, and allow an objective recourse to the customer with respect to the service provider to get their money back for their SLA. It's much better than saying, I have less packet loss than the other service provider, therefore you should get away from your service provider and come to me. That's kind of my research. Please.
I think the problem is that if you take a similar situation, DNS one that we actually saw in the earlier presentation is used to monitor slave service versus relief. And in Sweden we have three different competitive partners providing slave service for both SSL. And the DNS one tool that's available on the internet can be used to actually see which one of these three providers are performing tests.
So what you're saying then is that DNS one is a trusted source.
Sorry?
So what I hear you saying then is that the gold standard is DNS1.
Yeah,
because of non-commercial application.
Yeah, right. There's some alternative as well, but that's not what I mean. But what I can say is that if these three providers of slave services for the PSE, they definitely don't like the fact that the other web is publicly available when any earners can actually get access to it and see if they are actually performing their job. And in a similar fashion with this tool, because if you have a tool available where you can actually get a web page that you can sort which internet service provider are performing their self-service test, or which performance are getting, then you can get into politics.
I
think we should distinguish two things here. The first thing is, okay, we mentioned something about an internet connection offered by some service provider. And since all these service providers offer different packages and different line speeds, different over provisioning ratios, different whatever, what we should not do is say, okay, we measured it, and if I get an account from ISP A, I get 500 megs, and from B, I get 600 megs, and yeah, that's something I can look up just by opening the policy. But what would be interesting for me as a consumer is to say, okay, provider A promises this, this, and that, and provider B promises this, this, and that, and okay, what do they actually keep up on the promises? So the metric, I think, should be slightly different, not sort of the absolute number, but more the relative number, like this is provided to do what they promised to do. And what was my second point? That was on the DNS one thing, the three sites. Yes, I can sort of imagine that they're not completely happy with the fact that we can rank them, but on the other hand, I can say these three sites are committed to provide good service, and there is a tool out there that shows that objectively that one of them or more of them are not doing what they set out to do.
Yeah,
and that would be interesting for me as somebody who uses the service and even as the site operating it, I would be interested in saying, hey, there's a block of internet out there that does not reach my service. Hey, what's wrong there? Why is this not happening?
The good thing is that they're actually used to it at this moment.
Yeah.
So they are behaving. They're actually getting more, they have higher availability on the service they provide. And they're used to the fact that they are monitored by different kinds of monitoring services. But it's still an existing, it's still an obstacle we have to overcome to actually get. But because the problem here is that
where we're going to place the test boxes. We need to place them somewhere.
It's a very good question.
And the first place we're going to place it is the action parking that we're going to
monitor. Absolutely, it's a very good point, but I think that we all of us need to be on the same page with respect to the subtle distinction that Hank made. What we are talking about is not measuring one service provider against another service provider. What we're talking about is measuring the service provider against himself or herself. This is what we are talking about. And I think that this is, so the question that I as a user have is, I'm paying like 35 euros a month. Am I getting what I thought I was going to get for that money? That's the question. And I think that this avoids any contentiousness. You're not pitching one ISP against another. And it's actually good for the service provider. And it actually fulfills the niche. That's the distinction that Hank made. Yes. Anybody want to make a comment here? Yes. Go ahead.
Finally, this is from Hygiena. It's a very simple distinction. And in many ways, and even if what we're saying is, well, this is here for you to compare against what your service provider says they're giving you, there's not a huge huge difference there between you going, well, I can compare whether my service provider is giving me what it's said it will do, and I can look at this service provider over here and see if it's fulfilling its promises to its users who are paying their 35, whatever it happens to be. So why shouldn't I move over to the one that is fulfilling their promises? And I can just imagine the service providers who are in the marketplace seeing this as giving out more information than they might be about, and it being a comparison between them and other people. I mean, this was one of our worries when the information was made more free than it previously was with VPN, that service providers get worried about these things.
I agree with you, and I think this is my chief concern, but I think that sooner or later, consumers of the internet are going to become more savvy. And they are going to come to their providers, and they are going to call them to account. So the question is, do you want to be prepared for that day and have a good story, or do you want to be caught without a good story today? And I think that if you are prepared, not only are you going to improve your service and give better performance, but you're going to create more trust in your customer. But the customer will say, why would this service provider give me a neutral third party to compare the to get the metrics at if they would not be 100% confident about the quality of service that they give? I think it's a good marketing thing.
No. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's fantastic. Well, we're not commercial. We're not a commercial service provider. So
totally, I'm here. Yes.
The concept is to actually go to the CCTV and to provide a service where they can monitor which actual quality they're getting from their service providers, slave server operators. So in this case, we have a service that we're actually going to ask not the one that's actually going to benefit, because all the lazy engineers at the internet service providers, they don't feel like having someone actually watching their work and telling them that you can't do the router four times during the night, because people are getting mad that the internet connection is out. But we need to get at least the question is, we need to find a party that is actually interested in this other than the actual internet service provider.
Right, so how many of you here represent service providers? Oh, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, how many of you, are you those raise their hands? if you went to your marketing department and said, we want to do this, and how many of you do you think they, this sounds reasonable?
When we maybe never get served for fighting, probably
and you know, how would you do it, and would it be acceptable? So those people here who did not say that this would be a great idea, can you share with us, you know, why you do not think that this would be a good idea as a service provider? Anybody who said they're a service provider that could not enthusiastically endorse this? Yeah? So everybody thinks it is a good idea? Yeah? Do I hear a big yes or a small yes? Okay.
All right.
Okay. So then the first question that I had, and I'm going to take your silence as consensus, is that you do think that right is a good place to measure whatever from, that it would be trustworthy? Is that the yes?
Hell. We choose right for these measurements, accepting because the reason the first third party.
Because you have the same problem, right? Your customers don't trust you.
Well, I hope they trust us.
Well, I mean, you know, trust in quotes, right?
They just don't want give someone the chance to say, okay, it's yours. And this
well, they perceive. Yeah, they perceive that there is a conflict of interest in your measurement. Yes.
Yeah, but maybe one point which is to consider that we want to sit there. We know right, and we know what right is, and we trust right because we work with them. But the residential customers sitting in the village behind the gears and more, and I tell them this measurement is done by right, we ask what is right, can I eat that?
Yeah, we have a question of that, we are high speed, so
yeah,
how
close
do we know right?
How far for IX? Like, do we have to change the sound on IX? Everybody there knows right, it is right. For me, as a service provider, I need to explain to the customer what's right is more complicated than it's good for me. So for me, as a service provider, it's much more important that the, how the measurement is done is open, because only the ones who don't believe the measurement, they start to dig and can search how the measurement is done and all these things. So for me, then something like that is done is important that it's open. All the measurements is done is that if I have somebody who complains in their case, here for you yourself how the measurement is done, and if you don't understand it, so probably I can't understand it.
So I think what you're saying is that you have to build the right metric in the brand, and it is recognizable at a level of an audience that is wider than you know, service providers and change people. And that's a valid, you know, that's a valid concern. And yeah.
Can I just follow up on that? Okay. Let's assume you get the right NCC test box in the hall, the banging use, or you install smoking, etc., etc. And if your customer complains and you say, okay, here's some data from a third party, showing that yes, it's working as it should. And then you're saying, what I hear you saying is, okay, your problem is the customer doesn't know who this third party is. But is this something you think that the right NCC should be addressing? Since, I mean, we can do things in this way. I mean, and it doesn't really matter if we're right NCC or that we establish a new brand X. I mean, if you feel this is useful, then we can make some sort of information sheet or policy or something you can give to your customer saying, oh, this is what we do, this is who we are, this is what we do, and this is why you can just use these measurements.
What I meant is
yeah,
the audience doesn't know the box to measure it, which is open standards and all
measurements and you can manipulate it.
I see what you're saying. So you use the TTM, let's call it for now, metric standard as an SLA template for you. So in which the exact methodology for constructing the metric is well documented, and when you write an SLA, it is going to be a function some way of, it is going to map onto a very well known and well documented measurement methodology.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
All right. So the first question, I think we answered, then we are in violent agreement that right is a good place to do the work. Now we come to what is that work, and we don't really have a lot of time. If we can change for the big party, if we have a need some time to put our makeup and whatever, what should we do? In other words, what is it that it is of compelling interest to service providers and their customers? What do we want to measure? And where do we want to measure? Are the things that Neil is talking about, are they reasonable? Does it make sense? Is it first cut? If you were to do like a small trial and get an idea how things like this work, what would you do from a tangible viewpoint? Yes.
There is at least, I think it's really that there's three different types of services running right now, provided by different forms of governmental agencies that are used to test bandwidth, visibility across change points and so on. What I feel could be useful in a situation like this to complement that is to provide not the actual network for measurement, because it's going to be hard to write with measurement points in enough places to write interesting new for this decision department or any other part in Norwegian or Dutch or whatever. But it would be hard to actually get the global coverage of measurement points that provide an interesting local view, because that's actually where we are at this point.
Right.
But what could be interesting to provide a test suite, a tool that could be used for like ordinary people. It might be that we would build a test box that's a lot cheaper than the one we're currently using, that we can sell to an internet community.
So let me throw something out. Say you put out a PC, like the TTM type of PC with GPS and whatever, you're a customer of Telia Sonera, right? And you just go to a web page that belongs to Telia Sonera, by the way, and you sign up from your fixed or whatever it is, address, a pingable address from a central location. You sign up and you say, I'm willing to be tested, to have my service tested for latency, whatever, throughput, blah, blah, blah. That's all you need to do.
More crazy, let people download screensaver that makes their...
Right, you don't need to do anything else. And basically, once this is done, this box is deployed at a public exchange point, and it is scalable in terms of being able to take on customers from various organizations, and both the service providers and you, the customer, can just dial in and see how things are going. Does that sound crazy or what?
No.
Okay. Okay. But anybody venturing opinions? Does that sound like a reasonable thing? Yes? No?
Right.
Yes.
Machines can be used by to put in their own communication.
No customer premises hardware. Nothing. Okay? No program to run. The only thing that is required is a thingable address. Kind of like Neil's idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Except that you're doing it from a convenient point. So what I brought into the discussion right now is, what is a convenient point, a public exchange point? Is it a reasonable place from which a service provider would find it acceptable to have metrics computed?
I think that's not the user's connection being formed by whatever they're doing, and
starting there or not?
I have absolutely no idea. Right now, I'm just throwing down, you know, something just to get some discussion. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It could be stopped, but if we can move it, I'm not saying it's a good idea. If we can take it one step further to basically say, okay, we're building something that's not as extensive as the solution that we currently have, but not as simple as the one that we just proposed. We have something in between. Maybe a hardware that can cost 100 euro or something, 200 euro, with treated software that maybe I can provide some centralized point for data collection and investigation, software to put on that hardware, to basically provide a solution for communities that are interested in provide local measurements in their country, in their network. Because the problem we have now is that the infrastructure is so complex. So there is not one single point in the network that you can say, like an exchange point, that you can say it's a good reference point, because the other direct peers will most operate.
That's exactly what I'm asking.
Yeah, but one thing I can repeat is also following up on your sort of yesterday, but you have a box in the exchange, near the edge, where, so as provided, you can say, okay, this is where my network ends, and this is where the just big bad internet starts, and use that box, and say it's a TTM box to measure up to other providers, and you also use that box to measure in the other direction, doing things to your customers, which essentially the front thing is. Since the I agree with Alex, I don't think we should go in the direction of people having to install hardware at their home, since that's going to be a nightmare. If the box is only 50 euros.
Yeah, but it's a good idea. The first box, that's a really good idea. Let's keep that, but I'm proposing a second idea. That means that, let's say, there's an interesting party. Let's say in Sweden it could be some government or agency that has a couple of consultants hired that there are an interesting part that want to measure that. And they will go and buy ADSL connections from different source providers, place dedicated hardware, but they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can download software that's designed and working from it.
I'm totally with you, but I think that you have to walk before you run. So you need to show, first of all, that there is some community pool. Community pool that means that there is some interest. The people here think that it's reasonable. And then you do a small pilot, I think, and then you show that things are good. So my question to you is, if I'm coming back to the same, do you think there's an exchange point and there are exchange point operators here in the room, two at least that I know of, three of them, maybe even four. do you think that a public exchange point is a reasonable place from and to which the TTM metrics as they stand today are a good location to measure from? So, please volunteer answers.
What would the procedure be? Would it be like a web page?
store and you get to specify that this is my IP address. Ping me every minute for 3 days to check my response time and everything focus on my scrap so I can see what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, is that a possible scenario?
Well, I mean, we're speaking about possible ideas, and in the few minutes that we have left, some next steps. I mean, if you think that it is worthwhile taking some next steps, I'd like to hear it. And if so, what do you think they should do?
This
we're
a couple of ships from the bureau, and we told them there were requests of interest from other exchanges for us to do something that we did with the medium of the access to each other and making a land, like we were saying, presentation. And that's also a new market.
There is also a new market. Mm-hmm. So do you think that there is clearly interest in exchanging layer 2 exchange point market and other things, and customers we saw from me. Which one do you think would be good first mini project to tackle, if at all? So would you go after exchange point monitoring that you have done for the NSX, and by the way, have signed up for doing a presentation for October, right? Or do you go after a type of project like Neil has proposed in the context of EPM? Or do you do nothing because it's maybe a nice idea, but it's not realistic? So we have a number of possibilities here. What are the next steps?
From my standpoint, as the end customer is not interesting to me.
Right.
So I would say, measure the interest, but the nice thing about measuring exchange is that we have test bed at the engine, or test bed. We do it, of course, I mentioned one thing, but when we make things up like vacuum monitoring, stuff like that, we are ready to implement.
Right. Yes, Christian.
My name is Christian Nani. I'm employed by the University of Vienna, and we are running the European Research Network Arcnet and the Vienna Internet Exchange. So from both perspectives, I think operating a reference point as an exchange point is a very logical idea. On the other hand, the exchange points in Europe, as they stand, tend to be very neutral. What their target customers, which are usually the ISPs, are. So getting involved into the business of customers and letting them prepare towards a reference point is probably not a good idea from the point of view of a neutral exchange point. It also would give the necessity to answer end user requests regarding service, regarding model, regarding whatever. I mean, from time to time, end customers are calling us anyway. But if we would act as a reference point for measuring, then we would have to accept those calls. We would just send them back to the service provider. In some way, we would be responsible at least for the reference point. And I'm not sure if I, as an exchange point operator, would be very fond of answering any customer phone
calls. Right. Well, the way in which I was kind of imagining this, I don't know if it's right or not, is that the exchange point is not even visible to the customer. So the customer doesn't know where, unless they are computer savvy, network savvy, they don't know where the box is. So we're talking about two things. We're talking about where to deploy, where does it really make sense to deploy, and then how the customer sees it. What the customer sees is a box that is located someplace that is run by a third-party neutral organization, which is right, but it is somehow sponsored, or the URL to that particular site was given to them by their service provider. So, if I buy from Telia, let's say, Telia is going to give me a URL, which is going to end up on some box at NetMod. But
me as a customer, I don't know what's in, I don't know what management is. I have no idea. It's just a physical as opposed to, you know, logical, you know, deployment. Does it make sense? Because then you would not say, okay, there's something wrong with my internet. I'm going to call Christian because I know the box is right there. I'm going to come up on the door. Does this sound reasonable? That you are transparent with the entire process. But all I'm asking is an exchange point, a public exchange point, a good, reasonable location to do the measurement from a technical standpoint. Yes.
I'm sorry, he was correct. I think that what you're actually saying is really important, that the exchange point, the actual customers of the exchange point, the internet service providers, they don't like that the exchange point acting as a proxy to the actual talent, which customers, which internet service providers have. But I actually have just as a comment that, you know, I can see when they have a project called CFTS, it used to be like the energy number one for the internet service provider. There is actually a reference for that at the Stockholm National in the exchange, a reference for a national panel for this service provider. And there is that actually with different service providers that actually install their own reference. At their own infrastructure, just to tell the customer that if you want to get reliable family management results, you have to measure towards our reference point and not the reference point at some other infrastructure, because that's the bandwidth you can't get into, because it's passing through transit and peering and traffic. So it's good thing to know that you're interacting with the reference point. I don't know if it's a page or a machine.
That's very similar point. I don't think it's the ISP or the service provider seeing the exchange point as someone who's taking a hand in whether they're doing the best job or not. They're just going, well, here's the point, which is the weakest point in all of your networks. And so we're just going to provide this information. The only problem with putting it in exchange is it's not always the best egress point for the network to measure. In the greater people who are buying their transit from other egress points, and that's where the majority of their transit is still involved through a possibly less contended egress point in exchange. So that's the only possible problem there. And I think it's a reason not to put it in the exchange point. It's just that I think it's very hard.
Because if you assume that you have a working network infrastructure for that or not, then the exchange point could be a good reference point for actually measuring ADSL port and so on. If you want to ping your ADSL line, watch if you have some ADSL line actually seeing delays up to 2 seconds. So poor. So if you want to get reference material for that, then you could use a good reference material on the outside.
This was very good, and I'm running a little bit late, and I'd like to kind of get some, a couple of action items here and some conclusions. So in determined day, this is an idea that makes sense in the context of right to be, correct? It is agreement. I think that next step would be to have kind of a small-scale discussion amongst the few people that are interested. And we have a show of hands of a few people that would be interested in putting a tangible proposal together that they think makes sense. So, Lorenzo, take note of these volunteers. These brave souls. We have Neil. Yes. Yes. Very good. In conclusion, we're probably going to work and publish on the list itself a small, modest proposal on how to go forward with this. And I'd appreciate an email to me directly, or if you see me around and you want to give me some input on this, I'd very much appreciated. In the meantime, I want to thank you very much for making it here and staying over. Yes, Neil?
People will have noticed that I only arrived in the last few minutes, and I'm sorry that I had to miss the discussion here, because I was in another working group where I'm still going to be a co-chair for a while, and I couldn't escape earlier. Apologies.
Right. Thank you. So again, thank you for making it here, thank you for coming, thank you for the interest, and I hope that by the time we're going to have a discussion and put some proposals on the list, we're going to be kind enough and interested enough to give some feedback. Any other issues that we need to discuss? No? Nothing. Well, time to dress up for the ball.
Well, we have to serve as a working group.
Sorry?
We have to serve. There's a services working group.
Services.
Services working group. So we don't know how long?
Is this going on?
Which one? Oh, no, we'll get them.
Thank you.
10 the morning is okay.
Oh, okay.
in het geval van Harvey daar gebeurde. Van de gevangenen kunnen wij een stop en opvang.
Oh ja, yeah, of course,
right. Ja,
nu in elkaar zitten. Wat elk
pijn nu is, dus dat is veel voor het
duur. Oh, nee. Maar dat is wel.
En een andere uur is een half jaar dat we zien dat er geen te weinig fans zou komen. Dat is ook wel een half jaar. Ik krijg
Volgens mij kaartje wel. Niet zo.